Hi, my name is David Spade. And I feel sort of excited about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I believe we're going to have a very good show today. I'm in a good mood. I'm feeling good about things. Sona, you say sometimes when I'm in a bad mood, if I come into the office, you said you came in hot.
Yeah.
I'm joking around with sort of a rougher edge. Today, I think I'm in a pretty good mood.
Yeah. When you're in a good mood, I've noticed you kick people a lot. Like when Matt O'Brien, your head writer, comes in and you're in a good mood, you try to kick him through his driver's side window.
Okay.
Which is so screwed up.
It's so screwed up. So I'll tell you, this is, these are COVID times and we have to be careful. And so we are shooting our show over at Largo Theater on La Cienega.
Uh-huh.
And Matt, who is like a younger brother to me, and I just want to make, yes, coincidence. He has the same last name, but we are not related. Very talented head writer, very talented guy. And I've known him for years, and we work closely together. And I swear to God, as you know, Matt and I wrestle sometimes, and it gets a little, we throw stuff at each other. It can get a little, it's a little rough and tumble, wouldn't you say, Sona?
I would say it's very unprofessional, too,
yes,
honestly.
Yes, I guess that's another way to look at it, unprofessional.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the other day, Matt pulls up in his car, and he had sort of, he's wearing his mask, and he had lectured me about how we have to be on our best behavior because, you know, of COVID, and he always likes to lecture me about that. And for some reason, he put his window down to talk to me. And so I'm standing there in the parking lot outside the Largo Theater, and I have very long legs. I started trying to kick him through his open driver's side window. And he was like saying through his mask. Now, here's what's crazy. I'm wearing a mask. He's wearing a mask. I am 6 feet away because I've got really long legs. And I'm trying to karate kick him through his open window, which is hard to do. And he's saying through his mask, this is insane behavior. People can see you. And I'm saying, I don't care. I have to right now. I just have to. And I wasn't even, I love Matt O'Brien. I'm not mad at him.
No,
I just,
no.
I had to. It's like whack-a-mole. I saw his head. I saw his head through an open window, and I had to try and kick him.
And then you talk about it on a podcast with a million listeners.
Yeah.
Yes. But what I'm trying to say is that's my way of showing affection. That is a classically, you know, repressed Irish Catholic's way of telling another man, I have affection for you and I admire you, is to somehow try and injure them. That is really how I behave. There's no higher compliment than to be physically attacked by me.
Well, so, that's also how we know you're in a good mood.
You know what's crazy? That would be the way that most people would know you were in a bad mood.
Yeah, it's the opposite of affection.
I know. Well, who can say what affection really means?
I can, in the rest of the world. It's the opposite of affection.
Does affection, who can say, is affection hugging and kissing and making someone feel better or attacking them violently and causing them pain?
Nope.
Everyone has their own definition of what affection is.
You and Michael Myers, yeah.
You and sociopath.
No. I don't think a day went by when I was a kid when I wasn't being manhandled by one of my brothers or was manhandling someone else in my family. We were always just manhandling each other. That's how we communicated.
Huh. Okay. That's healthy.
As you being sarcastic, you saying you think it's unhealthy?
Yeah, I think it's unhealthy to hit people and be like, that's what my parents used to say to me about when my brother used to hit me. They'd be like, that's how he shows you he loves you. And I'm like, why can't you just hug people?
Boring.
Come on.
Because everyone does hug. I don't want to hug. That's not how I show love.
Do you hit your children?
I try. I chase them. They're faster than me. And they're, I think, both now stronger than me.
And does it work the opposite? So if you hug and kiss someone, you hate them, like Godfather to Fredo, it's just the kiss of death?
Yes. Matt, every time I see you.
Yeah, big wet one.
I give you a big wet kiss on the cheek and I say, Gorley, I know it was you. You broke, and then I say you broke my heart.
And you keep asking me to go fishing with Al Neary.
Don't do it, Matt.
You know what I love is that on The Godfather Part 2, and if this is a spoiler for you, then your life is sad because you should know this. But I love that it's like Fredo's going to take Michael's son out on the boat, you know, and he's going to go fishing. And they're like, yeah, just one more thing. This famous hitman is going to sit behind you in the boat. Oh, okay. Yeah, is it okay? He's just going to sit behind you in the boat. That's fine.
And the kid's not coming this time.
Guess what? Yeah. The kid can't make it, but the hitman's still going to go with you and sit behind you. All right, then. That's okay. I'm very suspicious. I'm always very suspicious when if I want to go fishing or on a ride and someone says, can this famous killer sit behind you on the way?
Yeah.
That's when I ask questions. That's just me. All right. Well, very excited about our guest today. I've known this, I'm going to call him a gentleman. Call him a gentleman. Oh. I've known him for so many years. Of course, he's a hilarious actor, comedian, who was, of course, a cast member on Saturday Night Live. And we actually worked together on that show back in the day, back in the early 1920s. He starred in such movies as Tommy Boy, Joe Dirt, and Grown Ups. He now hosts the new Netflix talk show, The Netflix After Party. And I really am excited. David Spade, welcome. We've known each other 65 years, I think.
We've been friends a long time. We met at SNL, probably.
Oh, wow. You've given this a lot of thought.
I think. You don't even remember?
I remember exactly when I met you.
Oh, you do? Really?
Yeah. And it's clearly it had a huge impact on you as well. I was a writer on Saturday Night Live. It's Conan. This didn't happen often, but Lorne invited me along to check out cast auditions at a comedy club. I saw a bunch of people audition that night. And then Rob Schneider auditioned that night, and I think he did well. And then you got up, and you were doing fine. But then, but then at the end, you just threw in an impression of Michael J. Fox. Oh. That's one of the better celebrity impressions I've seen. It was just completely spot on, and no one did a Michael J. Fox, and you did it, and. I think that clinched it for you. And then afterwards, Ron was like, I liked Schneider and I like Spade. Yeah.
Michael J. Fox guy.
Yeah. Michael J. Fox guy, which he called you Michael J. Fox guy for the next 7 years.
No shit. That's funny because the impression definitely saved me because I'm not really an SNL type guy. I'm not really like a man of a million voices and characters, and I don't sing and I don't play guitar and all that shit that would really help on that show. I didn't even know back then, but that would really help. So SNL was never in my sights. I wanted to ultimately work up to being a headliner comic. That was really it. And Dennis had warned me, Dennis Miller, this is great advice for you going. He goes, Spudley. I go, it's not that many people. He goes, Spudley, you don't want to kill too hard. That's a red flag. I go, so don't do good? And he's like, nah, it's a warning sign that you're a fucking road hack. And I go, so, and they're like, bringing up next, I go, so I do good or I don't do good, you know.
I think he was screwing with you, frankly.
Yeah, I know, believe me.
I don't need Spudley coming into my action here. I'm doing just fine without him.
Fucking nipping at my heels, yeah.
I remember you hanging out for the first time, and I got the impression that, like, Schneider, he got really tight with the head writer, Jim Downey, right away. And he was
right away.
And he was getting stuff on, and he was always, you'd like knock on Jim Downey's door and none of us could get in there to see him, and you'd open it up and somehow Schneider was in there. and he was working Downey and getting stuff on the air. And I remember I'd be working on something with Smigel or Greg Daniels or Odenkirk, and I'd be working, coming up with an idea or working on my own thing. And you'd always come by late at night at like 3 a.m. and you were real kind of nervous and you were like, how's it going, guys? Anybody got, what are you working on?
Anybody want to put my name on their sketch? Because I don't have jack shit.
But you know what else? And this is something that I like to remind myself, is the person who also seemed equally unsure and equally nervous was Chris Rock. And people refuse to believe that because Chris is such a confident, you know, superstar comic that if you tell them that he used to like peek in and go, hey, anybody got anything? What do you think? I don't know. What do you think? I got nothing.
100%.
And I tell people that and they don't recognize that Chris Rock. They think he could never have been that person, but that's what
they see like the Panther pacing in his act and killing and doing his specials and the confidence. Yeah. Well, just to bore the fucking shit out of everyone, we'll cut this out later. Obviously, I don't even know if we started yet.
Oh no, no, none of this will be. None of this will be in. Good. In fact, I doubt you'll get in at all.
I want to get in. Is this my audition episode?
This is it. This is your audition for the podcast. And good. But this won't ever. This will never make it.
That's okay.
You'll see.
This is practice stories. this is so Chris. We came on at the end of a season, which is sort of weird.
Yep.
We did four shows and then me and Rob, and then Dennis is like, you didn't get anything on. That's a bad sign. I'm like, how can I get anything on? Everyone's great here. I've said this before, but fucking you were there writing and Odenkirk. And you know what? I never almost ever mentioned Greg Daniels, and I forget what a huge monster writer.
Yep.
And he was there too, just to make it that much harder. And Jack Handy's a genius. I mean, to me, I think to everybody, but to me, I was always astounded reading his stuff going, he thinks so far out of what I even think. I'm like, what am I doing here? This fucking, how am I? I just have, you know, when you get there, you have a wooden desk and a yellow pad and a pen.
Right.
And like Jim Henry or, you know, Ken Among or Downey even goes, hey, here you go. You share this with that guy's name is Schneider. Go see it, read through. And then they all leave and no one's even at work because it's the middle of the day. So no one's there. And the people start trickling in and just go in their offices and close the door. And I go, am I supposed to write it? What the fuck's going on? I don't know how to write a sketch. So there's no learning annex. There's no coaching. I've said before, you were very helpful. You, I think, are just a normal, nice guy down deep. And
Down deep. So, yeah. How down deep, Sona? How
very,
down deep?
Very,
you
never
deep.
Been found.
I haven't found.
I haven't gotten there yet. Right past the magma level. But, you know, I think Bob Odenkirk is very sweet. I still do. And you're put in a cage like Gladiator. So I'm not even saying everyone has a gruff exterior. Everyone's just there to try to get their stuff on and do well in a very tough environment. So it's a tough world. So Chris Rock, you brought him up. He's a quiet sort of a sweet guy that when he's just talking, he's very nice. And that's why we sort of gravitated together because he could tell I was scared and I didn't have any like tough street smarts. I've never even been really to New York. I was from Arizona. I've never really been back east. I didn't know about accents. I didn't know Sandler's doing like New Hampshire, the Valancourt boards. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what I go, they have a different act. People here sound weird, but there's different ones. And so I'm learning every day different things. But the fact that I hung in there by a thread because you guys, when I go in to see you and Bob and maybe Greg and them, you would put the pad down for a second just to say what you want to do is try not to have too many sets in it or try to just some basics.
But what was the thing that I'm trying to remember? The first thing you did where you felt
that
like, wait a
me?
Minute. Yeah, that this, because everyone's got their sketch or their bit that they did that where they felt things turn. Like they felt, okay, I could make it here. What was that for you?
So I write one about Life Alert. Old lady keeps calling Life Alert just to talk to people, talk to the paramedics. You know?
Right.
It's, she's running out of ideas like, my hand's in the toaster and it's on dark. Hurry. And so... But it got enough where Shoemaker put it early and then it did well. And it was, I went into the board after and it was moved. So that meant they thought about it and they pull ones they like from all the sketches. You want to try it here? This, you like this? No. Here. Spades update. Mm-hmm. And then Franken, now.
Now.
Now. He's horrible. So I almost got on. And then after that, it was real dry gulch for a while. So the question you're saying is the following year, I was having trouble. And Lauren told Brad Gray and Mark Urbitz, my managers, I don't know if it's clicking. So I was just trying and trying. And I think I got one, a receptionist, where
I
was a receptionist.
There you go.
And then I think Lauren said, maybe write another one of those. And once he says that, you're in.
Yeah.
Then it was Hollywood Minute. And then Lauren really said, maybe one this week. I go, We just did one last week. If you don't want to.
Yeah, so you were going after people in Hollywood Minute, and it could be vicious.
Usually they have to have some sort of misstep to get on the list to make fun of. I'm not really going after them out of the blue. When I got it, when I left, I think they made fun of me on SNL like 3 weeks later. I was like, fuck, let me get out of the building. And then I think Family Guy did a joke, and then Simpsons did one. I was like, oof, like it's all in good fun, but I hate it. So I was on the other side of it going, oh, this does suck. Because I did one about Jim Carrey once, but it was too soon because I love Jim Carrey too. That was the worst part.
So what happened? Did you hear from him?
No, it was more that just the audience wasn't buying it. They loved him too much.
Oh, I see.
So they weren't having it.
Right.
But the ones I run into, I remember one time on 8H Lingo, I was right there by the page desk before you walk in. Remember there was no security there? I'm sure there is now, but you can just run out and tackle Paul McCartney if you wanted to.
There was no, like, no, I shouldn't put this out there. I know there's security there now. So only if you have a time machine can you use this to your advantage. But I swear to God, in the 80s and all the time I was doing late night, random people, and this is a true story. I remembered once Tom Hanks was on the show and I'm in a tiny dressing room talking to him before the show. And I notice there's a guy in the corner who I just assume is like Tom's manager or something. And then I notice the guy has like cut that weird kind of sunburn people only get when they're on the street all the time. And I sort of started to talk. Tom was talking to someone else and I started to say to the guy, so how long have you known Tom? And he's like, I don't really know Tom. And he's in a small room with Tom Hanks. And I lured him. I was like, hey, do you want to walk with me for a second? The guy was like, okay, yeah. And he came with me. He was a random guy who had taken a tour, just peeled off of the tour, was walking around, saw Tom Hanks in a dressing room talking to somebody and went in and was hanging out. He could have been a murderer. I was horrified.
He's like, I have to get back to stab Tom. And you're like, well, 2 seconds. I just want to show you where the band sits.
Hey, Conan's being really nice to me. Maybe I'll stab him.
Maybe I'll stab Conan.
So, there's security there now. But so you're at the page desk, and what's happening?
I don't want to waste my stabbing on Conan. He's going back and forth.
He's not big enough star. And then I start arguing. You know what? I actually am. I have my own lane. You could stab me and it would be a pretty big deal. No,
it's
not
a really.
Really
good story. You're right here. I go in and just a random one. Cameron Crowe is there. So Cameron Crowe, big director, writer, Fast Times, all these great things, who I worked with recently, who read my book, who's just out of the blue 20 years later, I see him, and the coolest guy in the world. But I was a fan of his, of course, from his stuff. And he goes, hey, this grabs me. Spade, Cameron Crowe, just want to say hi. You, blah, blah, nice, nice. And then I'm thinking, Cameron Crowe, he's married to someone famous. And then he goes, hey, do you know my wife? And I start to go over and I go, oh, no. And it's the woman from Heart, Nancy Wilson.
Yes.
And she goes, hey, as I'm shaking, you said something really shitty about me and my sister.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, it's all sinking in. I go, one problem is I love Heart. Again, I'm a psycho. I love Heart, but I just said a joke that was a little rough. And then I said, when you make a Hollywood Minute omelet, you got to break some eggs. Or I said something stupid like that.
Oh, I'm sure that smoothed everything over.
And she was like laughing, like, of course. No, she didn't like it. And then I went back at a concert maybe 10 years later, and I asked to go backstage and see them to apologize again because I went to their concert because I love them. And they were pretty cool about it. They were nice about it. But I had to go back and just say, God damn, you guys are great. And what the fuck is wrong with me? But it was just trying to get on the show. I mean, I talked to Schneider about this. Like, you know, whatever it was, it's a tough place. It's hard to watch. You know, it's just hard to be there. You know, everyone heard the same stories. I'm sure they're the same fucking now when you're there. And there's 25 cast members. Like, unless you're a star, you're not going to be on the show that week. They're like, hey, you look like Ross Perot. Cast member, and you go, really? And they go, you know who else does? Matt Damon. And they go, oh, fuck.
I do think that sometimes now when I watch Saturday Night Live, I think it'd be tough to be a cast member now because they do this, you know, they do this thing where it's like, hey, we can choose from any massive celebrity in the world to come in and play a part.
I used a hip reference like Ross Perot. And you know why I said that, I think? Because I'm still psychologically damaged from going, you look like Ross. I remember I called Smigel once. I never called Smigel on the show. I go, hey, Smigel, there's this guy I saw on the news. You've never heard of him, Ross Perot. He'd be funny to play, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then on Monday they go, yeah, Dana's playing.
Well, that's...
Why do you want a better version?
Why? Well, that's...
And I go, he can't. He's doing Bush. And Bill's doing Clinton. And he's like, yeah, we're going to figure it out with the latest technology where we're going to be able to have him do two and you do zero. I go, fucking shit. It's a rough place. But when you're with... you guys and Mike Myers and Chris Rock and Farley and Sandler. I mean, holy fuck, you just look back and go, if you knew then, I just thought everybody's this good. What the, I'm in over my head. I'm like powder. I'm too fragile to be here. Like I'm stressed every day. I'm losing weight. My hair is brown in 2 weeks. Never been brown in my life because I fucking, the sun is sunny for only 8 minutes a day if you're right between the buildings. Like, got it. Oh, it's over. So I'm getting pale and sickly and I'm eating pizza. I didn't have a glass of water for 15 years. I didn't have any vegetables when I was there. Honestly, I just ate Wally Josephs and Huxley's and fucking garbage. And then malnourished and I walked out of there going, I got my bell rung, and then everything was a little easier after that.
Yeah. You were very tight with Farley back in the day, and you guys were together at SNL, and that's where you ended up finding that you had a good chemistry together. And I heard a story once, I don't know if it's true, that he actually physically hurt you in a sketch accidentally. I don't is that true?
Well, one time when he picked me up for one of the motivational speakers, he had to like spin backwards and we both fell through a table and it did sort of jar me because I have a bad neck. And he's like, you acted like you were hurt. You fucked it all up. I go, I'm his wife. Oh, I go, how'd I fuck it up? It was the very end. They went to a commercial. He goes, hey, you were slow getting up. I go, who gives a fuck? It's over. I was hurt. Ah, fuck you.
Wait, he chewed you out because you both fell over backwards and you did get hurt and he was mad at you for being hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an abusive relationship.
So fucking funny. Yeah. It was funny. He's like, it's because, you know, his dad just yelled at him and then he turned around and yelled at me. So I went and tried to find an intern to scream at. But this guy sent me, you know, this is stupid, but on my phone. This guy, you'll laugh at this maybe. A lot of people get these pictures or tattoos, you know, like of me as Joe Dirt. You know, they send you, a lot of people get a lot of tattoos of stuff, like things you say or photos or whatever. Or they send me ones of Farley or whatever. So this guy sends me one of, he's got Norm of all morons on his hand, Norm MacDonald. So I text Norm. I go, I just send it to him. I go, hey, you have fans. And then I put in parentheses, fan. all we know is for sure this one guy. Uh-huh. And then of course, like days later, David, hello, it's me, Norm. How are you? Have you ever texted with Norm? It's
no, I haven't, no.
Times a thousand. He just goes, he waits days, and then at 3 a.m, hello? I go, Norm, what are you doing? Are you answering me from 4 days ago? Is that what you're doing? Dave, it's Norm. Do you like money? Yes, Norm, I like money. Why? Would you like to have more money than all your wildest dreams? Yes, I would. And then an hour later, would you like to walk into a dealership and point to a car and then just buy it? I go, of course. How? And then 3 hours later, bet the over in the Blackhawks game in the first quarter. First period or something. I go, oh, okay. Too bad that game was 6 days ago, you fucking idiot.
You know what's funny is that reminds me, I was just thinking about this the other day. Norm was on my late night show and always an amazing guest and some of my favorite moments. And I know that Norm is in the makeup room getting made up. And, you know, the band's playing. I'm about to go out and start the show. But I go in just to say, hey, to Norm. And what I want to do is make sure, I like to get in sync with people a little beforehand. Just make sure that You know, we're both on the same page, get a good groove going. So I go in, the band's playing, and Norm's always great. I'm like, hey, Norm, good to see you. And he's like, can you back out of the way? I'm trying to see the television set. Can you back up there, Conan?
The TV's
on. And so I sort of back out of the way, and I realize he's watching some college basketball game. And he's watching it. It's towards the end of the game and all this. And I go like, okay, well, anyway, good. And he goes, can you be quiet? Quiet. Hold on a sec. And then someone scores a basket, and he goes, and it's the game's over. And he goes like, fuck. And I'm like, what? And he went, I just lost a lot of money.
my whole dirty work.
Yeah. He's everything I made on dirty work is gone. And I just went, oh. And he went, oh, I'm in a terrible mood. And I went, okay. And then someone with a headset said, Conan, it's time to go on. And I went, I'll see you out there. And he's like,
30
fuck.
Seconds. Fuck you. You came in and jinxed me.
You jinxed me. I'm going to fuck up your show.
I'm doing a show with the jinx. You going to jinx my set? I know. He's so funny. I did his show on Netflix, and it was so funny. And it was an hour or something of just random. We both didn't know what was going on. And It was actually hilarious. A forklift or something drove through the set. I'm like, Norm. I did like it because it was so thrown together. And then he told me we were at a commercial, and I thought we were, and we weren't.
That's a good trick. That's a great trick.
It was a great trick because then he goes, so anyway, what's really going on? And then we start bullshitting about stuff I would never say. And then he goes, and we're back out of the blue.
I want to ask you, I don't know if he's still with us or not, but I remembered having, this was like 15 years ago, I'm at a restaurant called Shun Li. It's on the Upper West Side in Manhattan. And you were at a neighboring table with an older gentleman. And I called you over and you joined us, and it was your dad. And it was just like
Howard
this.
Stern? It was my dad.
It was your dad. I remembered you called him something interesting. You didn't call him dad. Pee-wee or something.
Oh, we called him Pee-wee back then. Yeah, Pee-wee. He goes by Sammy, but he didn't like that when he was one time when I was 14. You know, he took off on us when we were 4, 6, and 8, the boys.
Yeah.
So when he'd show up once a year and give me a Nerf football for Christmas, he would hang for a few minutes. So one of those few minutes, he goes, you got to go work. What are you fucking laying around? I go, yeah, I'm just a kid. He's like, get a job, you know, tell him, you know, he doesn't have a job, but he's like, hey, you got to work out there. And I go, I know, but he's like, hey, tough life, Davey. He's always giving me like advice. Meanwhile,
that's not advice. Tough life isn't advice.
It's tough out there. Anyway, he goes, when I was 14, I'd have to lay cement when I was in Michigan. I'd put it down there in the big form and go, hey, Pee-wee, you got to get your muscle. You got to push it in there. And then I just push cement around all day. Tells me the whole story. And I go, so what did you do after that, Pee-wee? And he goes, hey, fuck you. Don't pick that up from the whole story. And
so that's the one job he ever had.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only thing I cared about was they called him Pee-wee. And so the rest of his life, we all called him Pee-wee. And he was, you know, it's a weird thing. He did pass away. He passed away last week. So it's definitely.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Oh my
and
God. Oh,
it's
I'm
okay
sorry.
To bring him.
No, I'm no, sorry. No, I didn't know that at all. I remembered having this really sort of amazing dinner with you and your dad. And then I had no idea that he passed away a week ago.
Conan, listen, I'm not, you know, I didn't make some press thing about it, but he passed away. And, you know, I look back on the fact that he was, I don't remember him being dad at the beginning because I was 4, but then he'd pop in here and there. And believe me, I got a million jokes out of it. It was sort of, you know, it wasn't a great situation. A lot of kids have it, divorces and things. So I wasn't like the only one bitching about it. But we had enough to know him the rest of my life. And then it sort of faded out in the later years. But, you know, it was nice. There's parts that were nice. And I will look back on those funny parts and the fun parts because you said nothing wrong. I mean, this is my dad who I've talked about a million times.
Yeah, but you know, what's weird, first of all, I'm sorry that your dad passed and I can't believe that, you know, I always keep a couple of notes on the side of things to talk about. And your dad isn't even anywhere in the notes. He just popped into my head because I had this very strong memory being at Shunley, and I think I was with my producer, Jeff Ross, and seeing you and would turn out to be your father at another table, and you guys came over and we all sat together and had this really great meal. And I remember you calling your dad Pee-wee and not really knowing, I think I was aware, obviously, having known you at SNL, that you didn't have the most normal relationship with your dad because he hadn't been around. But I remember that being a really great night. You were really making him laugh, and he seemed just sort of delighted to be there. I'm sure he was, I mean, evidently he was really proud of you. So
yeah, he had a, you know, he had a, he kind of got a great scam going because he ran out on us. But my mom, you know, carried all the weight. So my mom, you know, we treat like a queen because she really hung in there. Three boys. I mean, what a fucking hassle that was. And got us going. And, you know, we got older. He sort of came around, sort of the timing of where child support would not be a problem anymore. You know, I was like 17 to 18. So, but then I started stand up. We're in the same town. So he started coming to the bars.
This is in Arizona?
In Scottsdale, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I got to SNL, and so I'd have him come out there. He got to meet guys like you. He got to hobnob around, which I like my dad around, of course. And then Andy was doing, started Kate Spade. So he's got that to sort of brag about with people he meets. He's got me on SNL, so that all is fun for him. And then, you know, we just sort of, I think what happened is I had a daughter, and then it just was a different dynamic to it after that. And I didn't love it. I thought, nah, I don't think I want. And then he was, you know, drank so much that by the end he was, you know, he had, you know, whatever it's called when you get older, you can't remember anything. And so
yeah, kind
I
of,
obviously
kind
have
of,
it too.
Kind of dementia. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a dementia, a little bit of wet brain drinking and all that. So that was hard to watch. And it got toward the end, and then we put him up in Santa Barbara in this nice place, and I go see him. But listen, it's not, he's not going to be there forever. So I'm glad you had a nice memory with him because there were a lot of really fun times I had with them.
Is your mom still with us? I can't believe I'm asking without knowing.
No, I'm kidding. My mom's still around.
What if you said she died an hour ago?
Oh, God.
I said, this just in, Conan. I just got a text.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. That's dark. That's really dark.
No, but my mom is hilarious and great and loves you, and she saw you.
I hung out with her.
Where was that?
I hung out with your mom at
Adam's kids,
Adam Sandler's daughter's Sadie's bar mitzvah. And yeah. I'm there and I'm talking to this woman and this is, I love
hitting on.
No, but across the table is Dustin Hoffman. And and she's like, oh my God, it's Dustin Hoffman. And
starstruck.
Yeah. And she's really starstruck. And I'm trying to remember this because it was really funny. She kept saying, like, I'm gonna go up to Dustin Hoffman and I'm gonna tell him. And she was like, I love the movie Tootsie. And I went, well, that'd be a nice thing to say to him. I'm coaching your mom. And then
she also said Amadeus was her favorite.
Yes. So that was the key thing is she said, I'm going to go tell him. And I'm talking to her and there's loud music playing. And she said, I'm going to go tell him that I love Tootsie, that it's like my fourth favorite movie because my favorite movie is Amadeus. And I said to your mom, what's her first name?
Yeah, I know.
What's her first name?
Judy.
Yeah, I said, Judy, I'm not telling you what to do, but in my opinion, what I think you should do is just go up and tell him how much you love. I was editing her speech. I was saying, just lose the part about how it's your fourth favorite. Just say, I love Tootsie. It's just one of my all-time favorite movies. And skip the part about Amadeus. And she was like, but Amadeus is my favorite movie. He's not in Amadeus. And she's like, yeah, I know, but it's the best movie. And then I said, trust me, just say I like Tootsie. So then I see her go over and the music's playing, so I can't really hear. And I see him smile really, like, because I think I'm sort of lip reading. And she says, like, Tootsie. And I see him smiling. But then I see her talking more. And I see her, like, acting out Amadeus. And I see his face kind of fall a little bit.
So predictable. Slow motion. I'm a dead. And I go, Mom, if it comes up organically, you could, because she goes, Conan says, I go, Conan's in the fucking biz, Mom. He knows. We get compliments and we know. We don't want to hear. You think people come up to me and go, I love Happy Gilmore, then Waterboy. And I know one of yours is up there. Tell me your movies. And I'm like, but I go, Mom, lead with Tootsie. and then stop.
Yeah, exactly. Same advice I gave her. But you and I both know that people will say something really great, and then they start talking about how you're like one of their 10 favorite comics, and you go, mm-hmm. oh, well, that's good. That's great. Then they'll start listing some of the other people.
Yes.
And you're like,
yes, that's a funny one.
I hate those people.
No, you know, you did it without being mean.
Yeah.
I've had it. My two favorite comments are you and blank. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. the exact opposite. Like, that's my worst favorite comic.
I like you. I like you and Kid Rock. I think you two are the best.
They do say that because we were in Joe Dirt, Cohen, and it's not a joke.
He was unaware he was on camera. You tricked him into being in that movie.
Oh, Kid Rock. I sharpen his acting skills, Conan. You walked out of that movie going, that guy can act. I know you did when you saw it.
I did.
But I get people that say, they're not even compliments, by the way, things they say to me. They think they are. And they're coming out. And you know what I thought would be bad, but was only, it wasn't that bad, was, and I go, whatever you're about to say, just don't say it.
Right.
I don't want to hear which one of my movies you thought would be horrible. They always go, I never liked you. And you know what one almost won me over?
Oh my God.
I go, I got in the vicinity.
What's your relationship like with Sandler? Do you guys hang out? I mean, obviously, you've worked with him a ton.
You know, it's like probably like you. It's pretty good. Like, I've always had fun working with him. We always joke, you know, I work for him and all that stuff. But overall, he's really just a dude that likes anything. You know, he's a New Hampshire guy that likes his buddies around and likes to bullshit and just do things. And I think I'm known and you're known. But when you get so high like Sandler like that, it screws with my head at a certain degree, but with that ultra fame stuff, and so much money, it's just got to be. It's a slightly weirder life, and luckily, he's got Jackie and his kids that are great, that are grounding. It's such a boring term, but they're all just cool and easy. And he's with them so much that I think he's in this bubble of sort of a good people around, you know, and when you have that, it helps you. And it's fun to talk to. He's fun to text with. It's fun to see him.
Yeah, I've never.
If we do a movie.
I've never been in a movie. And so I've never worked with him. I resent it that I haven't, you know, I could easily be a waiter or something in one of his movies.
Yeah.
But no, you know, you guys have your little, you have your little thing and I'm not invited. My point is.
You always come up though. They're always like, what about Conan? Everyone's like, And he's like, everyone voted no in the whole house. And I just think people would be like, that guy? I mean, it takes you out of it. And he goes, what if he's cross-eyed? I'm like, I'm getting somewhere.
Every single one of you votes no. Every single time. Yeah, that's probably the right call. But yeah, he works for a guy who's achieved so much. He's always like telling me like, oh, buddy, I've got like 6 movies going right now and I got to do this thing and then I got to go there, buddy. And sometimes I want to say to him, you don't have to do all this. You could do
anything. Yeah.
You could do a little less. I mean, it's good to work, but you don't have to. But he's very driven. He's very driven.
Sit on your pyramid of gold bricks in your foyer.
All right.
You could do that.
Jesus Christ. You know.
What? Is that dirty?
Well, no, it's just, you know, I mean, come on. The guy.
He's rich.
Is he really, though? I think he's not, doesn't have that
you
much money.
You know what?
Money.
You're right. I've never thought about it, Conan. Is he?
He's really not that rich.
I've seen money in his wallet, but that's the only money I've ever seen.
There's no proof that Adam Sandler has really had any financial success in the business.
There is a funny thing about his wallet is an old leather wallet. Looks like Costanza. It's got maybe $200,000. I don't know what's in it, but it can't even fold. And he puts it on the table because it doesn't fit in his pocket. So you just look at it and go, God damn, just if I stole this and just ran. I don't even need the credit card. I don't need all that stuff. I'd give that back, but I could just take the money.
He also has, he'll never dress up. I think for one thing, when he was up for an Oscar, I saw him starting, I introduced him at something and he was all dressed up and I couldn't believe
it. Yeah, it's tough. I was at an Oscar party and he rolls in his Jets parka. I'm like, oh boy. I said, do you have to out cool everyone? Like just, I look like an asshole because I wear a suit. He's like, you're still doing that? And I go, yeah.
No, you'll be at a, you'll be at a funeral and he'll show up and he's wearing you know, sort of those long basketball shorts and and Big Puppy.
Because either just played or he's going on his way to play.
Buddy, I'm wearing my best shorts. I'm so sorry.
He is a hard worker, though, man. Those movies, he puts so much effort into them. He knows what he's doing, man. He's editing one. He's rewriting the next one. He's doing the one we're doing. And I love it. They're all fun. I mean, he is on the set. Everyone thinks he just screws around, but he's in there.
Yeah.
It can get serious because you're losing light. You're doing this. You're trying to get your shots. It's set up wrong. We're blocking's fucked up. We're trying to get everything done and make it the funniest. And you know, it is a real business at some point.
Yes.
You don't get it.
But I don't get it.
I wish I could explain
things
it to you.
Things just come to me too easily. You know, just it.
I see your dead eyes. I'm like, and I'm not getting to them about show business.
I really don't think of it as a business. It's just having a lot of goofs and laughs. Hey, you know what? You have a hard out at one. So I don't want to keep you. I don't want to keep you any longer.
I have to Zoom work.
Do you though? Or is that just a thing? Is that a power play that you have to go? I think it's a power play.
It's not a power play. It's just tests have shown I'm fun for about 36 minutes. And then after that, it's like it spikes down.
Yeah. We have you clocked at 28 minutes. And then
I'm the Bitcoin of comedy.
Listen, I'm going to let you go. I am sincerely just very sorry to hear about your dad. And because I wanted to, you know, end on a down note, which is what I try and do.
No, you were a fucking blast to talk to. I don't see you enough. So getting an hour with you is a great time for me.
You know what I want to do? You know what I want to do sometime if you're up for it is Dana Carvey and I get together every now and then at a certain sushi restaurant pre-pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
And he's always...
That he stole from me.
Yes, and he always said, Spade turned me onto this place and I come here with Spade. And I've always thought, why don't I get to come here with Carvey and Spade? Why am I, there's some kind of rule. And I started to get creeped out and think Spade doesn't want to see me.
No, he won't tell me. He goes, oh no, he doesn't tell me. And then the waiter goes, why are we here with Conan and Carvey? I fucking was like, Conan O'Brien was in here. It was so fun. I go, I don't know. I would have. And then I go, Dana. And he goes, oh, would you want to go? I go, don't be an asshole. Anybody I used to like and hang out with, of course.
Yeah.
We'll fucking crack up.
All right.
Those dinners are so fun. I went there once with Dana, Dennis, and Kevin, and it's so fun just to watch those guys be hilarious. Lovitz goes there sometimes. It's like a good hangout.
Jealous.
Hello.
Does anyone recognize me? Hello, celebrity in the house.
God, Lovitz is still funny like that. He still says that.
He's a hilarious guy. Listen, I'm going to let you go, but be well. And when this craziness is over, this pandemic thing,
let's go there.
Let's get a meal. That'd be really nice.
Yeah.
It's time to go back in time for another edition of Big Dick History.
How is this doing, by the way, this Big Dick History? We stumbled upon it the way one stumbles upon a large penis in life. And and then suddenly, you guys are telling me we have to do it more and we have to do it again, which leads me to believe that there's been some kind of response out there.
It's taking over the world.
Oh.
Wow.
Big Dick History. Well, it's big.
I'll tell you this. It combines things that people are fascinated by. It's history and then penises.
It's the only history I'll listen to. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I know you are really into like dates and details, but I'm just like, how big was the dick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes. Well, if this is something that America wants, then it's our job to give it to them.
That's right.
You're welcome.
I mean, this can't bite us in the ass. The bigger the dick, the bigger the fall, but who cares? We're going to do something today called Big Dick History, the quiz. Are you ready?
Okay.
Just buzz in by yelling your name if you know the answer.
Okay.
Number one, what historical figure's swang and wang was described by a Time magazine journalist in 1927 as a, quote, maltreated strip of buckskin shoelace?
Wait a minute. Can I hear the question again?
Sure. What historical figure's swang and wang was described by a Time magazine journalist in 1927 as a maltreated strip of buckskin shoelace?
Oh, my God.
Is it Rasputin, Napoleon, Prince Albert, or Vladimir Lenin?
Oh,
I'm
going to
say
it would be...
Sona.
Yes,
Lenin.
Sona? Incorrect.
I'm going to say Napoleon.
Napoleon is correct.
God damn it.
Yeah, because...
Oh, God.
They actually claim to have Napoleon's penis. So
that's right.
The others would not be available for inspection, whereas I think Napoleon's would be.
My understanding is it's actually at like a bookseller's. Keep in mind, a lot of this research is rumor based, but for our purposes, who cares?
You know, it's not only owned Napoleon's penis by a bookseller. Did you know this? It's used as a bookmark.
The shoelace.
Yeah, that explains
a
lot.
Yeah, when this guy's reading 50 Shades of Grey and he gets to he's tired and he wants to just turn in for the night, he puts Napoleon's penis into the book and shuts it.
Oh my God.
After he uses it to floss his teeth. Okay, next question.
What did you do that?
How can you go too far on big dick history?
Well, you know what? You can and you just did.
Using a dick as floss. I think that's where we draw the line. For big dick history.
Well, we had to find it.
All right,
number
next.
Two, actor Gary Cooper was nicknamed the Pennsylvania Pipeline, New York Pork, Old Faithful, or the Montana Mule.
Pennsylvania Pipeline.
That's incorrect.
No, it's correct.
No, don't start this again. This is big dick history.
You have to lose graciously. Yeah. Just try to lose graciously sometimes.
Wait, what was the question again? I thought we were asking, what's the best way to get oil to Philadelphia?
No.
Was that the question?
It's about Gary Cooper.
It's the Pennsylvania Pipeline.
It's not.
Oh, yeah. The Montana Mule. Yeah.
Sona, what's your answer?
Go with Montana Mule and you'll win.
Come, I don't want to.
Go ahead.
Because if I do, then I know that you did.
No, go ahead. It's Montana Mule.
I'm going to go with Old Faithful, actually.
It's Montana Mule.
Fuck!
So nobody gets the point there.
Oh.
Yeah, but you know what? I get a point for telling Sona what was correct.
Okay.
No, you don't.
Because I knew it was correct. And then I told Sona, she refused to take it out of foolish pride.
Yeah.
And she went down in flames.
If you knew it, why did you say the Pennsylvania one first?
Because I had a funny joke about how to get to oil. To Philadelphia.
Okay, question three.
That doesn't make any sense. You got it wrong. And then you
nope,
guessed
I always
the second
win.
Time. So your chances of getting it right the second time were better.
Nope, I always win.
No,
go ahead.
You definitely didn't win. That one was wrong. So Conan was wrong on that one, Gourley? Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Conan O'Brien's Always Right was the original name of this podcast.
Oh,
you're giving Big Dick History a double meaning on this podcast. Okay, number three.
Don't let that go. Let's edit that out.
Okay. Athlete Wilt Chamberlain's big guy was nicknamed the Stilt, Big Dipper, Drill Bit, or the Bazooka?
Sona. I'm going to say...
Can I say something? Shouting out your name.
You're winning and you're still somehow a sore loser. This is incredible.
I'm going to guess the Stilt.
That's not correct.
Come on. All I have to do is guess.
Conan, the remaining choices are... Big Dipper, Drill Bit, or the Bazooka?
We all know it's the Drill Bit.
Sorry, it's the Big Dipper.
Yeah, I know.
You got it wrong, Conan. I'm not sure if you knew that.
No, here's the thing. I know the answers to all of these, but by appearing not to know them, I don't come across as someone who's obsessed with penises.
I should have known never to do a quiz. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, number four.
Most infuriating person to do this with.
Yeah.
There's no
Conan.
Worse. Okay.
Oh, I thought that was the next question.
Number four. Juan Bautista dos Santos was known for a forked schlong, B, one main schlong with a tiny little schlong coming out of it, kind of like how a xenomorph in the movie Aliens has one of those little things, C, two separate working schlongs, or D, the biggest schlong ever on record.
Sona.
Yeah.
I'm going to say a double schlong.
The two separate working schlongs?
Yes.
Or the one main schlong?
Two separate working schlongs.
That's correct.
Conan, I got it right. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I know, but did everyone notice that she has a hard G and she went schlong?
Okay, see, that's what you're going to do.
Schlonga.
You're going to have to be
schlonga.
Petty like that.
That threw me off.
All right.
Schlonga. And then I'm like, I don't even want to play when I hear schlonga.
Okay, you want to be petty like that. That's fine. That's okay.
We're all tied up.
I got it right and you got it wrong. We're what? What are we, Gourley?
We're tied up. Three questions left. Okay.
Thank you.
We had a very popular, stunningly popular podcast. Until we took on this,
it's never been bigger.
This horrible turn down this awful road.
Okay,
all right, go
so
ahead.
So mad he's
Number
tied
five.
With me.
Though evidence is scant, Adolf Hitler is rumored to have had which two genital abnormalities? Okay, so you have to name both if you can. And if one person gets only one and the other person gets none, they'll win. Okay, one, undescended testicle. Mm-hmm. Two, missing testicle. Three, penile hypospadias, which is the urethra opens on the underside of the penis, or four, micropenis.
Okay, I have the answer to this. And I pick two or pick one?
You pick two.
Well, first of all, one ball, missing testicle, is soldiers sang songs about it during World War II, probably propaganda.
Okay.
And then the other would be the micropenis.
You got one right. You got the missing testicle. Micropenis is incorrect.
Micropenis is a relative term. I think compared to mine, it would be a micropenis.
Okay. I'm going to guess it's the urethra one, where the urethra is underneath.
That's correct. So you each get a point here.
Okay.
Okay.
There you go.
It's all tied still.
Wow. It's tied, Conan. This is exciting. Tied. The Big Dick History Quiz, and we're tied. So.
Number six. Which classic rock star had his big old yam cast in plaster?
I got it.
Okay.
Jimi Hendrix.
That's correct. Nice.
Oh, wow. How do you know that?
Because I own it. I own it. I use it as it's a popsicle mold.
Oh, come on.
And, yeah. Well, I just distribute them through the neighborhood. No one knows what they're really sucking on, except that it's delicious and cherry. What an awful, awful road we've gone down.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Final question. So, Sony, you can tie it up here, or Conan, you can take the victory.
I want this so bad.
Number seven. Errol Flynn once used his John Thomas to do what? Swat a fly, play piano, open a door, or hail a cab?
Me.
Sona.
I know this one, actually.
Play the piano.
That's correct.
Oh, was that what you were going to say?
Yep.
No, you know what? Now you can lie.
That's a famous story.
Is it?
No, that's a well-known story. Yeah, he played a Baltimore rag. He played with his left hand and his penis.
Okay.
And apparently he did three shows a night.
Oh, I almost
True story. He was a session musician. He appears on a lot of classic Bing Crosby songs, but he's uncredited. You can just hear in the background the piano, which is lovely. Lovely playing.
Oh, my God.
Occasionally you hear a thwap.
Come on.
Other than that, the songs are, yeah.
Okay, then the tiebreaker here is I'm just going to see if you guys can guess the answer to this question without multiple choice. What is Jonah Falcon known for?
Having a big penis.
Would you care to elaborate?
Large penis.
But that's ridiculous. That's the point of this whole quiz.
I know. That's
Sona.
Called me being so really good at guessing.
I'm going to need more information.
You're going to need more than that.
That person had the largest
what
penis.
What could he do with it? No. What could he do with it?
He made puppets. Penis puppets.
Okay. Conan, why don't you give your answer? Sona seems to have given hers, and we'll see who gets...
Can I hear the name again?
You're stalling.
Jonah
you don't
Falcon.
Know. Yeah. Who is Jonah Falcon? Don't you? Are you Googling?
He is.
I'm not
your
Googling.
Face looking
oh
down
God.
To where your phone is.
You're
going to
be disqualified.
Oh, my
I'm not
God.
Googling.
Conan, come on.
I'm not Googling.
Yes. What are you looking
doing?
At your
no.
phone
I'm
for?
Not, I'm no. not Googling. No. I'm not Googling.
Why are you
I
looking at your phone right now?
I'm not Googling.
You what
have,
are you looking
you have
at?
4 seconds. 3, 2, 1. Sona, you get the point.
No, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to. That's ridiculous.
Yes.
I didn't do anything.
I can't
I
believe you
anything.
Cheated in Big Dick History Quiz. I mean, that's a new low.
Cheat.
Yeah, that's worse than the flossing.
No, that's not true. We all know that he's the guy who claimed in 1999 that he had the largest penis in the world.
Oh, my okay. God.
At 13.5 inches. That's just something people know.
Oh, my God. Really? 13.5?
He has the largest penis on record, apparently.
Yeah, but you know what they found out later, and this is a true story, that they on closer examination, he had stapled four penises together.
He also claims to be the son of John Holmes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's the staples that gave it away. You can't do that. Can I just say one thing? If you're out there and you would like a larger penis, and that's something occasionally people wish for, stapling other penises to your penis is not the way to go, kids. It doesn't work. Trust me. And it's really no substitute for just liking yourself as who you are.
The more you know.
The more you know. That's my public service announcement.
Congratulations, Sona. Do you have any words?
Wait a minute. First
thank
of all.
Thank you so much.
Are you
I
happy
thank
to
all
win
the
by.
Big dicks in history.
What a shitty way to win, Sona. Congratulations.
It's not shitty because you cheated. That's why
yeah.
I won.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Congratulations. You won the contest of Bush v. Gore. Congratulations, President Bush. What
you
a
wanted
weird way
to win so bad, you cheated.
You needed the Supreme Court. i.e. Gourley, to step in and hand it to you, despite the fact that I won overwhelming in the popular vote.
You didn't win. You got your answers wrong, and then you Googled...
Wronga?
Okay, now you're attacking my hard G's. That's what happens. This is
I win.
Problem. No, you don't. Come on.
So, default. So I win.
Can you so be a grown-up? You have children.
You know what I love? No one gets it more competitive and angrier than Sona. Yeah. It's true. You got it with that, Sona, right?
Imagine, oh my God, I am so mad right now. I'm mad and I won, and that's the thing that pisses me off. Oh, you love this. You are the worst person I've ever met.
He's playing piano.
Swap. I'm playing piano. Swap. He's got two of them.
Why can't you say congratulations on your victory, Sona?
Sona, to congratulate you on being declared the winner because of a rule infraction.
Because you cheated.
In multiple choice big dick history is the saddest win I can imagine. And for me to congratulate you on that, to me, is beyond the pale. I won't do it.
You cheated.
It's okay. Your victory has been ratified. It's certified. You've won, Sona.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You should feel good about it. And I don't...
You're Trump and I'm Biden. That's the way this is. It's not Gore Bush.
But join us next week for Big Bush history.
Is this really what the podcast is going to become? Yeah. Dicks and Bush and you snickering and Sona laughing? Is that... I was trying to elevate the podcast.
No, you weren't.
And make it something... I was. And try and make it something special. And then you guys come in with your snickering elementary school shenanigans. I won't have it. I won't have it.
If you won, you'd be very different right now. And that to me is my prize, is seeing how angry you are and how you're attacking my hard G's because you're so mad you lost at this quiz. And I won, and that's something I'm going to have forever. So...
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sona Movsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production, in association with Earwolf.